Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Michael Cabanatuan, transportation reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle and your moderator for today's program. You may notice that one of us is missing here today. Sean Randolph will be joining us shortly. You can find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. Today's program is being underwritten by AAA of Northern California, Nevada, and Utah. Our focus today is transportation in California and the impact of the federal stimulus package. How are the funds being spent, and what does this mean for the short-term and the long-term future? From BART to Muni, from bridges to tunnels, the state is in dire need of transportation improvement overhauls. The federal stimulus promises to infuse some critical projects with needed funds, but which ones will get the green light and which will remain on hold. How should this one-time infusion of money be spent? On filling potholes or on building needed transit and highway improvements that will last well into the future? On subsidizing transit operations or on adding service improvements? Our panelists today are, to my left, Randy Iwasaki, incoming director and former chief deputy director of Caltrans, where he has served in various engineering and management capacities for over 25 years. Joseph Cruz, Director of Transportation Policy and Government Affairs for the California Alliance for Jobs, and Sean Randolph, who will be joining us as President and CEO of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. And I've got an opening question here. With the state of California facing the massive budget problems that we're all too aware of, it would seem that the federal economic stimulus package couldn't have come along at a better time for transportation. Yet, even with the stimulus funds that have been allotted, we're looking at cities and counties that won't be able to fill potholes, transit agencies that are raising fares and cutting service, and delays in bond-funded transportation projects. Wasn't the stimulus funding supposed to boost transportation spending? Are we failing to spend it wisely? And is it just being used to sort of fill the state budget deficit? Why don't we start off with Randy?
Thank you, Michael. I'm pleased to be here representing the California Department of Transportation. In regard to your question, I think that the Recovery Act funding couldn't have come at a better time for California. If you take a look at how the money was split, normally in normal states, the money is split 70% to the state, 30% to the local agencies. In California, what we did is we passed legislation that sent 62.5% to the local agencies, and we retained 37.5%. So our share was right around $910 million. And so what we did is we took $625 million off the top to deal with our deteriorating roadways, our bridges, safety issues, and we funded the SHOP. So if you look at last year's state fiscal SHOP program, it was $1.5 billion. That's what was programmed. We only had around $1.1 billion in revenue to fund that $1.5 billion program. So in essence, what happened with the influx of Recovery Act dollars is we were able to fund last year's program and a little bit of this year's State Highway Operation and Protection Program, which basically funds safety, roadway preservation, bridge preservation, facilities, and then we call it mobility and shop mandates, so stormwater and things like that. And so we took the $625 million and used that for that. The other thing what happened is we had around $1.5 billion. Well, we have a lot of bond projects that weren't moving. And so we took $310 million of the remainder of our share, and we funded four bond projects. They were the 905 in San Diego, 405 in Los Angeles, the 215 in San Bernardino, and the Caldecott Tunnel, the 24 here. So in essence, that $310 million is going to jumpstart $1.6 billion worth of bond projects. And so that's how we financed or we split up our share. And the local agencies are doing their part now. Their projects are starting to be obligated and to go out for advertisement and then be awarded to contractors. And that's really where the action or the rubber meets the road is when the contractor gets the award of that contract and begins to do the work. That's where we put people to work. So I think, is that... answer the question?
I think so.
Okay.
Would you like to take a shot at it, Joseph?
Yeah. Good afternoon. My name is Joseph Cruz. I'm actually with the California Alliance for Jobs. And I represent three basic construction crafts, the operators, carpenters, and laborers, as well as their employers, 2,000 employers. Were they actually the guys who are on the jobs performing this work? And, you know, in light of ARRA being funded, I think ARRA as a whole, the $787 billion package, was presented to taxpayers as a infrastructure stimulus package. From our perspective, and we're not complaining because it's money that's coming our way, we would have liked to see the infrastructure component a little larger. I think of that $787 billion, 4% is actually going to surface street and bridge reconstruction. As an industry, we're experiencing 25 to 30% unemployment within the industry itself, within the various crafts. And that's because of the downturn in the residential and commercial markets. For our guys who perform the new capital and some of the maintenance, public works projects is the only game in town. So this money is obviously basically life support for our industry. It's doing its job in some places. We do have some concerns, obviously, with some of that money not hitting the streets as fast as we'd like it to. But Caltrans and the regions are doing everything they possibly can. I think the obligation window, the 120-day obligation window, kind of tied the hands of some of our planning agencies and Caltrans, and we couldn't get that money on large-scale projects like we wanted to. For our industry, the large-scale capital projects like the Caldecott Tunnel, the Oakland Airport Connector, that's been an issue in the Bay Area, obviously, recently, Highway 24, those projects create the most jobs and they create the jobs quickly. We would like to see some more of that money go into large-scale capital projects. The maintenance side is big and more is probably larger for some of the county programs and city programs who have their own maintenance crews, and some of our guys do that work. But we see the stimulus at this point is more of a relief. There's a job creation component, there's stimulus, but it's more of a relief program to keep existing jobs in place more so than creating the larger-scale jobs that we like to see. And again, I think part of that was because of the obligation windows that were attached to it, the 120 days. I think that's where I'm at.
Okay. And as you probably have noticed, Sean has joined us now. And I should probably repeat the question for Sean so he has a fair shot at answering it. With the state of California facing massive budget problems, it would seem that the economic stimulus couldn't come along at a better time for transportation. Yet even with stimulus funds allotted, we're looking at cities and counties unable to fill potholes, transit agencies raising fares and cutting services, and delays in bond-funded transportation projects. So basically the question is, are we taking the right approach and is stimulus having the impact that it should?
I think to begin with, quite a few of us were disappointed at the total amount allocated in the stimulus bill for what you would consider to be hard infrastructure, including transportation primarily. I think it could have easily been double what it is currently and have a beneficial near-term and long-term impact. But given that it is what it is, you know, we have an opportunity to take advantage of it. I think anybody who deals with infrastructure spending knows that it's really hard to kick it off right away. You have to have your project pretty well advanced before to be able to say you're going to be doing some hiring anytime soon. And that I think this has probably already been addressed. There are a lot of projects out there that just aren't cooked enough to be able to qualify under the terms of the Act. So we're going to see a lot of the actual spending, and this is true of the stimulus bill in general, but especially transportation, not hitting the streets in 2009. We'll see probably a wave of spending actually getting spent in 2010 and some trailing off into 2011. So the immediate short-term stimulative effect this year is going to be very limited, probably more stimulative effect next year. Then the question becomes, well, is it stimulation? If the economy is already on the mend, you can make a case, well, it's not stimulating that much. if it's not really mending that well, then you could say that it's preventing it from getting worse and it's sustaining and supporting continued momentum toward a recovery. But all that is just to say that I think we need to look at it not just in the context of immediate short-term job creation, which we're all looking for, but job creation over the next probably 2 years. And also from the standpoint of infrastructure by definition is longer term. So apart from repaving streets and filling potholes, if we can get things done like rebuilding Doyle Drive and the Caldecott Tunnel Bore and get some movement on high-speed rail, then we have what would be a long-term economic benefit and a longer-term stimulative effect.
Okay, thank you. And I think it's time for me to remind everyone that you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're talking about transportation in California and the impact of the federal stimulus package. Our panelists are Randy Iwasaki, incoming director and former deputy director of Caltrans, Joseph Cruz, Director of Transportation Policy and Government Affairs, the California Alliance for Jobs, and Sean Randolph, President and CEO, Bay Area Council Economic Institute, and I'm Michael Cabanatuan. And one of the questions I'd like to ask, and perhaps this should be answered at least first by Randall, is can you explain the process for determining which projects get stimulus funding? As a transportation reporter, I can tell you that, like everything else in getting transportation funding, it's not simple. But can you explain what the process is and how it's determined what projects get funding?
Sure. Thank you. What we did at Caltrans is we took a look at our program, and the real major issue, the hurdle was how much for the shop and then how much for other types of projects. But having said that, what you do is you look for, as Sean said, a project that's cooked right. It's got to be in a certain point along the project development process in order to select it, in order to meet the obligation requirements that the federal government set upon us. So 50% of the money had to be obligated by June 30th, 2009. And so projects, and they use the term shovel-ready. I don't think there's very few shovel-ready projects because you have to change the mix of funding. So projects that are ready to go need to have an environmental document that's approved. It should be almost through with the project delivery process. And what happens then is once the ERA money is substituted, you have to go through this FTIP amendment process with the regions. So they have to take a look at how the funding is in the TIP, the Transportation Improvement Plan. And I can see you're all nodding off because it's pretty boring stuff, right? But that's what we do. And then you have to modify the federal STIP, the Transportation Improvement Program. And so it's a really complex project. And we went through project by project. We added projects in that took a look at rehabilitation. We took another factor of, is it in an economically disadvantaged area? We ran all of our projects through an economic sieve to make sure job creation was there. And after all that analysis, we came up with our 57 shop projects. And then we took a look at the bond projects. Where are the bond projects that are ready to go? Same criteria. So the Caldecott Tunnel was ready to go. The 215 project in San Bernardino was close. 405, a $1 billion project in Los Angeles, needed some bond funding. That was ready to go. And then the 905 had all bond funding on it. We substituted bond funding. So that had to go through all those machinations with the federal government, Federal Highway Administration, and the regions in order to get all the paperwork set. And that's really the process, what we use to select those projects.
Okay, thank you. And Joseph, if I could ask you another question. You touched on this, but the purpose of stimulus money, of course, is to create jobs and pump money into the economy while at the same time creating transportation improvements. How much is California benefiting already? And how much do you think California will benefit? I don't know if you have any sort of multipliers of numbers of dollars spent and the benefits expected or the number of jobs.
Well, I think to date, MTC had a figure that was posted, I think, on the 9th of July, where they have, I think, of 77 million of their $187 million that was allocated to the Bay Area obligated, but only 9% of that money is actually going awarded to contracts. So I think there's a little time elapse between the money coming from D.C. to being reimbursed to projects. We'd like to see that escalated a little bit. But on the whole, about 18,000 jobs are created per $1 billion spent for infrastructure. 7,000 direct jobs being guys on the ground doing the construction work, about 3,000 indirect jobs, and then about 10 more thousand. So it's about 20,000 jobs induced just through local spending. So I think if you do the numbers on the statewide, about $2.5 billion, we're looking at about 40,000 jobs just in the construction industry from the stimulus, which is a lot of work, obviously, to jumpstart our economy. And all guys are ready to go. It's just a matter of getting some larger projects off the planning table and that money on the street. I also wanted to touch on just the issue you talked about, Randy addressed as part of the criteria. I think the benefit of the Bay Area, considering one of the disbursement requirements was center lane miles and population, L.A. and San Francisco Bay Area obviously fared the best through ARRA. But another big component of getting local projects teed up was the 7 of 9 Bay Area counties being self-help. I think the larger scale projects went through the environmental right-of-way planning processes early enough to get those projects teed up, and then the ARRA money came in at a good time, obviously. It was a benefit, obviously, to be self-help in the situation.
Okay. And Sean, since you're with the Bay Area organization, do you think the Bay Area has received its fair share of economic stimulus funds?
Yeah, I think it has. you could always debate what's the fair share of it in terms of the size of our economy, our population within the state. We're going to do fine for that. There was a process that the state, through the Business Transportation and Housing Agency, initiated back at the beginning of March, where they asked 12 different regions around the state to each come up with a plan. They call it an economic recovery work plan for how the state should allocate those federal stimulus funds passing through Sacramento, over which the state has some discretion how to spend them. So these would not be formula funds, but discretionary funds. So, the Economic Institute had the Bay Area. We had counterparts, the Economic Development Corporation in L.A., similar group in San Diego, and all 12 regions. What we ended up doing here, which I don't believe the other regions did, was we actually tried to prioritize our projects. So it wasn't sending 500, but it was sending 100. So we believe that's going to help the Bay Area in its conversations with the state articulate and advance and promote better the projects on its priority list. But I think at the end of the day, we'll do fine relative to anywhere else in the state.
Okay, thank you. And we have a lot of questions flooding in. I can tell you that questions about transportation never stop coming. But I'd like to begin with a few of these, and I'd say whoever wants to answer them can really jump in unless there's something directed to a specific person. But I believe there is one here for Randy, which was, and these are all questions from our audience. Is high-speed rail getting stimulus funding, and is the Transbay Terminal and its train box getting stimulus money? Or do environmental impact reports need to be completed first? That may be a little too detailed, but
I know what they're talking
okay.
about. I thought Bill Gray asked that question. In the Recovery Act, there is a high-speed rail, intercity rail component. It's $8 billion. I believe that we've collected all of the responses from the various applicants throughout the state. It has to be an approved program by Governor Schwarzenegger, and so we're trying to go through the notice of intents right now. But for the $8 billion, I believe it was $16.5 billion. And so I know that the train box is in there for funding. I think train box is $300 million. And so, yes, is it going to get funded? That's the other question. But I think what happens here is you see the need for transportation. I mean, if you have $8 billion for the nation and California comes in with $16 billion worth of needs right off the top, there needs to be, and that was addressed earlier, we needed more money. We needed more money for infrastructure. And so the answer to that question is yes, there is a component for high-speed rail, intercity rail, and there is a lot of needs, and the train box is in there for the Transbay Terminal.
I might add something on that, that I think California is probably better positioned than any place else in the country to get a substantial share of that $8 billion, due in large part to the fact that last year we passed a bond measure to finance about $10 billion of that up front. So I think in that respect, uncharacteristically perhaps, we're ahead of the rest of the country in already having cash on the table, already having some skin in the game, which should make it, in a competitive environment for those funds, easier to get a substantial part of that.
Okay, we have another question from the audience, which I'll sort of pose to the entire panel and modify just a bit. How will California spread the spending throughout the state? I'd also add, how should the spending be spread in order to be fair? What about cities versus rural areas and Northern California versus Southern California?
Well, the one, that's a great question. The $1.6 billion that went to the local agencies is spread by formula. So you're going to see it going to the local, the cities and the counties by formula. So I'm not sure that anybody will be left out. But what happens in that case is if you get a dollar and you put a dollar on a project, now it's Recovery Act-ized. And you come under the reporting requirements of the Recovery Act, which are very, very onerous. And being the program manager for Caltrans, it requires a lot of reporting to the T&I committee in Washington, D.C. You've got to report to Federal Highway Administration. The Department of Finance in California wants information. Everybody wants information on that. So once you put a dollar on that project of Recovery Act money, it's going to be looked at and scrutinized, and you're going to have to be very, very transparent. So that's one of the cautions. On the state side, what we did is we put a GIS map together to take a look at how those little dots all played out throughout the state. And what we're seeing in the SHOP area, the $650 million that we set aside for the SHOP, is we're getting bid savings. And so when we get bid savings, then we take a look at, okay, where are those locations in California that aren't getting work, and trying to put projects up there so that there is an economic generator up in those locations as well. And so Joe talks about major big projects. One of the things about littler projects is not only are they easier to put out quicker, but they also allow for small business and DBE firms to help bid on that work. So when you get these huge projects, they take a long time to build. These smaller projects are very short-term in nature. So the first ARRA project that was funded in California and that was awarded was the I-80 project in Fairfield. And so my wife really likes that because she was complaining to me all the time about how poor 80 was. And so I said, well, you got your wish. You got the first project in California. But it'll put more people to work quicker.
And just to dovetail on his comment with regards to what we're getting for ARRA funds as far as the work, I mean, our engineer estimates are 30 to 40% lower than they were 3 years ago. So this money that's coming in on the federal level is buying a lot more and obviously putting a lot more people to work. So it's a good time to be out, getting these projects done.
I might add that we like metropolitan strategies. Not any comment on spending in rural areas, which is important, but the metropolitan areas of California, as they are around the country, are really the drivers of the economy and job growth, and that's where the investment in the infrastructure will have the most critical impacts, both short and long term. So we think it's appropriate, aside from the formula funding that is going to happen automatically, in terms of bang for the buck, that regions, and again, it's not just a city or even the nine counties, but this would include the I-80 corridor off to Sacramento, be the principal beneficiaries of the stimulus investment.
Okay. And here's a somewhat related question, but we've talked a lot about the process. Could you please address how the results will be assessed? Is there any sort of program of metrics or anything to measure how these projects have worked, number of jobs that have been created, amount of infrastructure that's been created, or potholes filled?
Yes, the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, as well as the Federal Highway Administration, requires us on a monthly basis to gather information from the contractors to report how many jobs or direct jobs that were created. That information is sent back to Washington, D.C., and then the indirect factors are placed upon that, and then a report is derived. And so if you ever get a chance to hear Chairman Oberstar speak, he can rattle off the numbers for the nation about how many jobs are created, both direct and indirect, and those types of things. But yes, we have to report direct jobs created by the contractor. We have to, I think, from an economic perspective, that's the only requirement that we have. I think on Prop 1B, we ended up on the CMIA projects, the Corridor Mobility Improvement Account. We had to do before and after studies, but ERA doesn't require us, or ARA doesn't require us to do that.
I think it's a good opportunity to plug the Alliance. The Alliance from the private sector side is going to be taking some of the monthly information that has the job numbers and putting together online a map of California. That's going to detail all the projects and what the economic benefits, both job creation and the pure economic numbers generated from each project on our website, which is www.rebuildca.org. So that will be probably in the next couple of months we're going to compile that information and get a good read on what those numbers exactly are.
And there is a process chaired by the Governor's Office of Planning and Research out of Sacramento, an interagency one, overseeing or coordinating stimulus spending and investment, where I think there will be some level of oversight there at a state level for how the funds are accounted for.
Okay, and it's time to remind everyone again that you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're talking about transportation in California and the impact of the federal stimulus package. Our panelists are Randy Iwasaki, incoming director and former chief deputy director of Caltrans here in the Bay Area, Joseph Cruz, director of transportation policy and government affairs for the California Alliance for Jobs, and Sean Randolph, president and CEO, Bay Area Council Economic Institute. I'm Michael Cabanatuan, and I've got an awful lot of questions here. I'm going to try to combine some of them a little bit here, but there's a question here about how much can stimulus really help highways when the infrastructure needs so much work. I'd like to sort of frame this in a sense of how much of the emphasis should be put on maintenance, filling potholes, pavement repairs, that sort of thing, versus building new road capacity or new transit systems, that sort of thing. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I think I touched on it earlier. Those who work in the transportation industry know that California has about $1 trillion in maintenance needs. Whatever we do on the federal level with our money is a down payment, obviously, to ultimately meeting those maintenance needs, goals. But the most bang for your buck from an industry perspective is for new capital projects, because there's materials, the construction folks themselves, the engineering, and a lot of the movement of this material as well involved in those projects. And we see they're the job generation piece being larger at that level. So we would like to see, obviously, more capital projects, and we understand because of the obligation requirements we may not see as much. But, again, this is a down payment. The maintenance side is obviously a big need, especially on the county level, in the rural counties especially, because they don't have the larger capital projects. And in light of what's going on with the state budget and the highway user tax account being in play, that's the sales tax on gas we pay for maintenance. ARA is a godsend as far as for the maintenance side of the state SHOP projects.
It's a very difficult policy decision to balance the maintenance of what you have or the preservation of your existing infrastructure and new capacity. If you take a look at California's economy, a lot of it is based on goods movement. And so where you have high levels of congestion, preserving the system is one aspect, but you're going to also have to go in there and fix those choke points to ensure that the goods and services move efficiently through California. But having said that, if you take a look at the way the state split up the 900 and plus million that we had, we spent $625 on preservation this time and leveraged $1.6 billion of capital projects for the future. And we thought that was a pretty good balance.
Okay. Now, we have a question here. What is the likely result of the current state budget crisis on transportation? I'd also like to frame that in. How will these two programs, stimulus and whatever kind of funding we end up for transportation in the state budget, likely cuts, how will those either offset each other or how will they work together? What are we looking at in terms of transportation with the benefit of the stimulus fund and funds and the cuts in transportation spending that are likely? And can we start with Randy and then move across the board?
I think they're two separate issues. I think the stimulus dollars are the shot in the arm for the last, at least last year's program, and then part of this year's program. The budget issue, if they start dealing, borrowing, I guess is the right term, from the state highway account, it impacts future programming. And those programs are already set. So as you pull money out of the state highway account, you run into two problems. One, you're going to not be able to match the federal dollars because for every federal dollar that's spent, it's a 90-10 split. So 90% federal requires 10% match. So as the state highway account draws down and you don't have state cash to match, you can't get federal money. That's one problem. Number two is you'll be over-programmed in the future. And so our staffing levels and our contracting out levels are based on future programming levels. And so as those projects become too expensive, you're going to have to take projects out because you have to have a financially constrained transportation improvement program. And so I see that as a big problem as they start to wonder or start dealing with borrowing from the state highway account.
Joseph?
Well, for spending most of my hours in the Capitol now trying to basically save transportation funds in the state, we see two proposals. One is a deferment of payment for Prop 42 for two quarters, and that would amount to about $300 million. So they would basically hold the transfer from the general fund to the state highway account in two quarters and wouldn't pay it back probably till May of next year, and that's being optimistic. The other, and I think I mentioned earlier, was the highway users tax account money, which is about $1 million that goes to fund local road maintenance. That's $1 billion that's being looked at to backfill the $26 billion budget deficit from the counties, which would have a huge impact on local road maintenance programs and their crews. The layoffs from CSAC are huge. We're hearing, in the excess of, 1,200, 1,300 people just in Northern California to be laid off from those maintenance crews, which is big. And one bigger implication, we did well the last time we went out to the bond market. I think we sold $6.5 billion, and we anticipated selling $4 billion in bonds. A big chunk of that was transportation. We're not going to be so lucky this time. I think a few days ago, our bond rating was downgraded to basically almost junk status. If we don't get a budget in the next few weeks before the money we have for transportation is fully used, we may have to think about shutting projects down again, which is a scary thought. But I think that goes to tell you that ARRA is that important because of our state budget crisis. And if we don't get this done in the next, like I said, next few weeks, we're going to be in a whole world of hurt again.
And not much I could add on that, except that on the bonds, until a few weeks ago, California was rated, I think, either just ahead or just behind. I think it's behind Louisiana, which is not a really great point of comparison, and now we're triple B, and I think we're the only state in the country to be triple B, which is as low as you can get for a state. So there's a lot of consequences if that goes on. The only other thing I would add is that there will be, of course, a positive stimulative effect of the stimulus spending on transportation and other things. But unfortunately, in the case of California, to some degree, that stimulative effect is going to be offset by other cuts in state budget and state services and state programs. So where we net out, a little bit hard to say, but what's happening right now in the state budget is going to take away some of the net benefit we would otherwise see from the federal infusion.
Thank you. We have a number of questions here about transit, and some of them are very specific questions about transit projects, such as the Central Subway and so on. But I would kind of like to frame it in the same way that I framed the question earlier about maintenance versus longer-lasting transportation improvements, although I guess maintenance does make improvements last longer. Should stimulus funds that are dedicated to transit agencies be allowed to be used for standard maintenance and operations of transit, for example, to pay the bus drivers to make sure routes keep operating, or should it be used in some sort of an expansion, either to buy new equipment, add new lines, that sort of thing? I know there's been somewhat of a debate over that, and a lot of the questions hint at that. Anyone like to jump at that?
I'll actually take a stab at it. From the Alliance perspective, we've been huge proponents of public transit. We were the folks who actually ran the high-speed rail campaign in California. We helped pass Alameda County's sales tax measure, Contra Costa County's sales tax measure. That said, I think using ARRA funds to provide relief for existing operator salaries is not the way to go to create new jobs. I also would say the extension of existing lines, we were big proponents of the Oakland Airport Connector Project the last month or so when it was being debated by MTC. But I had the opportunity to look at the list of transit of projects and what the purchases were. I would say is buying, 147 buses that are going to be built in Detroit beneficial to the Bay Area economy? Is buying an $8 million ferry boat in Washington going to benefit the Bay Area economy? I say no. I say put that money on projects that are going to be built here by people who work here who are currently in our union halls unemployed.
Okay. Thank you. And some of the other questions here pertain to a lot of questions about BART. Could BART be helped financially by the stimulus package? I can point out that all transit agencies get a portion of stimulus money or get a distribution of stimulus money based on their size, basically the number of riders, and there are some rules as to how they can spend that money. But yes, BART does benefit from that. Some other questions here about compensation packages and that sort of thing. Here's a question, though, about it's basically asking whether the Metropolitan Transportation Commission has any role in project selection. I think Randy touched a little bit on the process, but I'd like to sort of frame that in the context of how are local versus state and regional needs taken into consideration in determining how stimulus money should be spent?
I think in California, what's interesting about with the passage of the tax measures is that the partnership between the state and the regions have grown closer. The Metropolitan Transportation Commission in particular works closely with the California Department of Transportation's District 4 when they develop their plans, because it's going to one project affects another. And so I think in the case of MTC, they went out and looked at their targets, went out and talked to the region, and developed their prioritized project list. And so they have a lot of say in how the local projects and local dollars for Recovery Act were spent.
I could probably add that when we did our process over the last few months for the state through the Business Transportation Housing Agency, as opposed to other areas such as investment in science or workforce training or housing or a variety of other areas, the one area where there was already a plan and a process in place was transportation through the set of priorities identified already by MTC. So there were a few things that sort of fell outside of their scope, such as the potential for investment in things, new things like electrical vehicle infrastructure. But in general, we simply endorsed the plan that had been developed through a regional process by MTC.
Okay. And Joseph, since you mentioned the Oakland Airport Connector, I'll direct this question to you. Could someone please explain why the Oakland Airport Connector is not a very low priority project with very marginal benefits? I'm guessing you disagree.
I do disagree, and part of that disagreement is centered on the fact that when Alameda County reauthorized their Measure B, that project was a big piece of that ballot measure. The voters of Alameda approved that project. The benefits generated from that project on the construction side or just through the ridership. I would say on the construction side, for our money, it is a good example of where we should spend our money because of the economic benefits associated with it. I'm not as familiar with the ridership benefits. I think there are some numbers generated that say it's obviously it would work ultimately. At the end of the day, it's been a project on the books for 30 years. I think a lot of folks want to see it happen, and you know we've been proponents of it.
Okay, thank you. There's also a question here about the asking everyone here to sort of analyze the public mindset in terms of supporting mass transit, and I guess also there, in terms of highways. How do you get a sense of what the balance is? Is there declining support for highway improvements and driving? Is there increasing support for mass transit? Do there continue to be demands for both?
I'd say there's demand for both, and there's a bit of a bifurcation between, I think, the general public and elected officials and policy leaders. I think the general public is very strongly supportive of highway development, highway expansion, better interchanges, and all of those things because, for better or for worse, the vast majority of people continue to move around the region by private vehicle. I think if you shift the focus over to public policy and elected officials at the city, county, and regional level, I think you'd see more of an emphasis shifting toward increasing the share of investment in public transit. So I think that there's obviously support for both, but it's weighted a little bit differently depending on who you're talking to.
Okay. Thank you. And let me find another question here that's not too repetitive. Randy, what are your chief goals at Caltrans as soon as you take the helm?
I think what we're going to focus on at Caltrans is a continuation of delivering the program. We're going to try to become more efficient. We're going to take a look at customer service. We're going to continue to try to improve our customer service elements at Caltrans. We're going to be better partners, continue to work on being not saying yes all the time, but continue to our efforts to listen to what our partners really want and need, and then try to go out and do that, all in an environment where there's declining revenue, morale is getting lower. Somebody asked me, why'd you take the job now? I said, well, I don't think it can get any worse. It might. But over the years, I've seen Caltrans' reputation as a transportation leader in the 70s be pretty high. And then as the time has gone on, it's gotten lower, and I see a rebound now that Caltrans employees are proud to walk around and say, we work for Caltrans. We've delivered over 1,088 projects on schedule. We missed one over the last 4 years, and so we're delivering on our commitments. This latest furlough issue is kind of impacting that, you know, when you lose 14.23% of your time that you can spend on projects. But I think all of our employees understand what their role is in this economic stimulus. So we've got to deliver AERA projects on time. We've got to make sure that our regions are delivering their projects for the local dollars. So if they're having problems, we'll help them. So those are kind of some goals, project delivery, making sure our employees are safe, making sure the traveling public is as safe as possible, and then going out and doing those efficiency, customer service, and partnership initiatives. Thanks for asking the question.
Okay. And this question was also directed to Randy, but he seems to be on the hot seat, so I'll sort of spread it out a little bit here. But You brought up the matter of staffing and furloughs. So I guess you could talk about furloughs, but I'd like to know whether the furlough issue is posing any problems in terms of spending. And sort of along those same lines, you know, gee, is anybody hiring? Anyone looking for workers who, you know, to do some of this work with some of the stimulus money?
The furlough program, when it was implemented, I think it was February, if I remember correctly. We said to ourselves, it's 2 days. It's not going to impact the current year schedule because most of those projects are being completed. What the problem is going to be is the downstream projects, and we're seeing some of that now with the addition of the third day. People still want to work. They're saying, we want to come in on Friday and do work, and we're having to tell them, don't do that. And so you're going to see an impact on project delivery for sure into the future. But it goes to show you the bad budget climate that we're in. I mean, the governor wouldn't resort to 3 days furlough if we didn't have a problem with revenue. And so the state's getting ready to run out of cash, and so we're trying to do our part. What was the second part of that?
Really, that was just directed to the the other panelists here. Are there jobs out there? Is anybody hiring? Is this creating jobs? I know you've talked about creating hiring opportunities for people in hiring halls, but anybody looking for workers?
No, I think there is an opportunity. In light of the residential and commercial markets going away, we ramped up obviously our workforce. And now that market is gone, the union halls are seeing between 20 and 25% of their workforce out of work. I think because of this work coming to fruition now, it is putting people to work. The timing couldn't be better. A lot of those guys are, because it's a transient workforce, they're also going to be looking at moving out of state because there may be more opportunities for them out of state as well. But I think to keep our workforce in California is our priority, because when this economy does turn, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for a lot of construction work with that workforce no longer in place. Whatever we can do on the local level to create these job opportunities through through some of the local funding mechanisms is going to be beneficial, not only on the short term, but on the long term for our industry.
Okay. And Sean, how do you think we can measure the progress that we're making in terms of job creation locally?
I think it's primarily just tracking the projects as they ramp up and construction gets underway. Again, we're still very early days on a lot of this. I'm not sure whether the process Randy is talking about will track down to the metropolitan level, but I think we'll know when the projects are underway and when the hiring gets started. I could mention just a range of the projects that are on the list for funding, just to kind of give a sense of how diverse they actually are. There's, of course, there's a lot of projects, but there's the Bard-Oakland Connector, there are Vasco Road improvements down in the South Bay, HOV lanes, the I-580 US 101 connector in Marin County, hot lane connectors, there's pedestrian improvements in Concord, there's some streetscape activity in Martinez, very local, downtown improvements in Campbell, pedestrian improvements in Windsor, and of course you've got these very big ones, high-speed rail, BART to San Jose, 7th Street rail separation or grade separation in Oakland, which really relates to goods movement and how efficiently goods move in and out of the Port of Oakland by rail. If you can separate from the street level, then you've got a lot more efficiency. And rail bed improvements over the Donner Pass. So you can see quite a range of projects there, some of which are very local, relatively small, and things that will happen relatively quickly, and then some of those which are, of course, going to be bigger and longer term, and you'll see those the jobs being created over a longer period of time.
You know, there's about $1 billion worth of work awarded in California, and all that has gone to construction. The contractor hasn't started the work yet. And over the next 4 or 5 months, another $700 million is going out. So there's a lot of opportunity. If you're looking for a job, what I would suggest is the Union Hall and other places that you normally look. But Caltrans has a website, www.dot.ca.gov, and you go to Office Engineer, and they have a look-ahead report. And that look-ahead report takes a look at those projects that are going to come out in the future. And so if you're a contractor or you're an employee that does that type of work, you may want to look at the local contractors that are bidding that type of work. We're getting between 6 and 8 bidders per project, so there's a lot of action out there. And as the vendors, the contractors, get more than one project, they're going to have to hire more people.
Okay, and it's time again to remind everyone that you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're talking about transportation in California and the impact of the federal stimulus package. Our panelists are Randall Randy Iwasaki, incoming director and former chief deputy director of Caltrans, Joseph Cruz, director of transportation policy and government affairs for the California Alliance for Jobs, and Sean Randolph, president and CEO, Bay Area Council Economic Institute. I'm Michael Cabanatuan. And one of the questions here seems to be something that sort of pertains to the whole situation. How is it that the public transportation budget, the deficit and shortfall, seems to have come about all of a sudden? It seems as if no one planned for this. I guess sort of starting with Randy and moving across the board here, can you explain whether this came as a big surprise, whether this is something we didn't anticipate?
I think our financial people anticipated. They work in the background trying to ensure that everybody's notified. But I think it all lately started when the PMI, the pooled money investment accounts started getting lower because the state wasn't selling bonds, and it was getting precipitously low. And the board said, we're going to stop payment, which then all of a sudden, out of that, were bond-funded projects. And that's when we were really notified that hey, your bond-funded projects may have to stop. And so we started scrambling around looking at you know, what is the impacts of that. And it was around $200 million to shut the existing bond projects down while we were waiting to get the bonds sold, and then another $200 million to restart those same projects. And so it was really like flushing $400 million down the toilet. And so I think that it although it appeared that we were caught off guard, I think we were in the background trying to do everything we can to keep those projects going. And when the PMIB said there's not going to be any funds coming out of the PMIA, that's when we really knew we had a problem.
Did this come as a surprise in the construction industry?
I mean, I think we geared up for it because when we worked on the props 1A through 1E, we didn't read the tea leaves, so to speak, but we kind of seen the economy turning. I think we were lucky when we went out to the bond market and got 6.5 to keep those projects going. I think we're holding our breath with the state budget. I mean, just to put it in perspective, I live in Sacramento, and I have a really good friend of mine who's actually on a city maintenance crew with the city of Sacramento. This guy has no interest in politics whatsoever. He calls me up 2 weeks ago and says, hey, Joe, what's going on with HUDA? I'm like, wait a minute. What do you know about HUDA? He says, well, I've just got a letter from the city manager saying that I may be laid off if HUDA isn't funded. I mean, so that really hit home for me because this was a friend of mine who I don't think even votes who all of a sudden had an interest in state politics. So I think from now on, we're kind of hoping that the state does its job, gets a budget done, and then our bond market shapes up. But I think every year my organization fights for Prop 42. Ever since we passed Prop 42 in 2004, it's been an ongoing fight. It's never stopped. Transportation funds, transit funds are perennial targets in Sacramento to backfill the state budget. Just a few weeks ago, the transit agencies won a legal case that said that the taking of their transit spillover funds was illegal and they have to be paid back. I think the state has since, filed a countersuit or whatever and is trying to delay that action. But I think this is an ongoing battle when the budget crisis hits this point. Transportation funds and other funds for infrastructure are never safe when a budget deficit hits these numbers. So I think it's going to be an ongoing battle. Like I said, we're holding our breath to see what comes out of the Big Five meetings the next couple of days, and that will give us an indication on, you know, how fast we move and how active we will be in the job market in the coming months. But the problem, too, is that, you know, we do most of our work during the spring and summer, and if we start getting money to fund projects in the wintertime, our guys, you know, weather permitted, just can't get out there and do the work either.
This actually opens up a broader topic, but it does point to the critical nature of the budgetary issue in California, not just from the standpoint of how does it get resolved this week or next week or whenever it gets resolved, but the structure of the state's budget process. If we go back to the last big budget crisis, which was around 2002, 2003, you'll recall, that's when Gray Davis was kicked out and Governor Schwarzenegger came in, and we were all going to fix the budget and no more credit card for the state, et cetera. And the causes of the crisis were pretty well known. There had been a lot of analysis, and it's not rocket science to show how you would fix the process. But fast forward, here we are 6-7 years later, and virtually nothing has been done to fix the budget. There was one measure on the ballot last May that would have had a essentially a budget cap at a 10-year moving average of prior state budgets, with the extra, if there is any, going into a rainy day fund with tighter restrictions on how you could use it. So that went down with most of the rest of the ballot measures, and right now we essentially have made zero progress on budget reform in the last 8 years, even though we know very clearly what the source of the problem is. So I think it just does point to the question that there, you know, the need to change the process. It's not just balancing this year, which is critical, but the entire underlying process. There's a couple ideas out there. There's California Forward that has a variety of measures supported by some big foundations. There's the proposal gaining traction now for a constitutional convention. But whatever the case may be, unless we get a fix on the underlying budget process, we'll be having this same discussion next year, the following year, or 3 years from now. And every time we have the discussion, we're starting from a point that's deeper in the hole.
Okay. And since you brought up the bigger question or the larger picture, I'd like to sort of continue along those lines. Clearly, part of the problem here is not just the recession. It's not just the state budget crisis. It's finding a solid, dependable method of funding transportation. Why don't we start at that end of the table with Sean and sort of move across with the suggestions on what's the best way to address or to come up with a stable source of funding for transportation in California? Is it increasing the gas tax? Is it a vehicle mile tax? What ideas do you have?
I defer to my colleagues on the panel on that. Of course, gas tax keeps coming up. It's probably underfunded in terms of how transportation has evolved in the last 10 or 15 years or more. But I think I would defer more to Joseph and Randy on that.
Well, I think, you know, part of the problem is we haven't indexed our state gas tax since 1994. So we're still working on 1994 numbers. We will have to, I mean, I looked at a figure just yesterday saying that we'd have to raise our gas tax by 40 cents just to meet our infrastructure on transportation needs. So I think in some cases we have to rethink looking at indexing that gas tax. The number I don't know, but I know it's going to be significant. It may be doubled. The other I would say, because I work on a lot of local sales tax measures, is lowering the threshold for counties to pass a local sales tax measure. Right now it's 2/3 in the state. In most of the urban counties, Bay Area, LA, have sales tax measures. It's the more rural nature, and I point to Solano and Napa, who have had trouble, obviously, passing a sales tax measure to generate their own local transportation funds as possible candidates for a lowering the threshold passage of a local sales tax measure. So I think that needs to happen on the front end. We've kicked around the idea in the Capitol. It obviously has some opposition from the Republican side of the aisle because of the tax increase. And another part of the gas tax is, you know, we're funded by per gallon. And I think as cars become more fuel efficient and people drive less, it drives the overall sales tax take way down. And we're being underfunded on that level as well. So I know VMT is one possible way to go, but that conjures up ideas of Big Brother for a lot of people, and it raises concerns on that end. So I would say index the gas tax, lower a threshold on sales tax, and I think that would partly get us to where we need to be.
I think my position is that we need more money. You can see from today's discussion that there's not enough money to do all the things that we need to do in California. I think whatever the system is, it should be performance-based. I'm going to be interested in watching the authorization or reauthorization of the surface transportation bill in the federal side, because they're going to have to deal with that here at the end of September. If they get an 18-month extension, they're still going to have to deal with a program that is underfunded. And so I think working with the federal government, we're going to take a hard look at how do we deal with this underfunding of transportation, not only in California, but in the United States.
I think another big piece of that, and I forgot in working with Caltrans, is the public-private partnerships. I think there has to be a way we need to be able to leverage private investment in some of our large-scale construction projects. I know there's a bill in the Assembly now, I think the Tarico bill, that will build out the Bay Area's HOV lanes and make them hot lanes. That would be a good candidate down the road to look at a public-private partnership. And I think in the last budget, we were authorized four projects to look at that as an alternative. I think that's one real way to fund transportation in the future.
I was going to actually add on that for MTC, the so-called hot lanes are high priority, and, of course, the way that would work is the people who choose to pay the incremental fees to use the hot lanes, those fees would be turned back to invest in other transportation infrastructure. So that's one way to increase mobility and generate additional revenue specifically for transportation. The other, I'm glad Joseph mentioned, is public-private partnerships. There's not every project or every transportation project is appropriate for public-private partnerships, but there's a lot of experience around the world, in Canada, in Australia, in the UK, many other countries, in India, in using these. And there's a lot of money, $1 trillion or more, out there in capital markets that's actually ready to be invested in infrastructure. California has been way behind the curve of other leading economies in adopting these kind of measures, and one of the signs of progress we made, it came out of the last budget deal in February, actually, was a bill that is now law that essentially opens the door to an unlimited number of public-private partnerships for transportation specifically. So it's not going to do everything, but there is an opportunity now to bring a lot of private capital in for the right kind of infrastructure projects, and the state is just creating, I think it's really getting launched this month, something called the PIAC, the Public Infrastructure Advisory Commission, which will be a body designed to advise and assist the state in the development of the marketing and ultimately the selection and the management of private investment in public transportation infrastructure. So there's some real potential in that.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there's time for just one last question. And since we're talking big picture here, and we might as well end with a provocative one, aren't highway expansion projects going to increase driving and therefore increase global warming? And how does that jive with the state's commitment to cut global warming or greenhouse gas emissions?
I think it depends on the type of project. If you take a look at the choke point reduction projects or operational improvement projects, it actually helps improve the climate change issue, the greenhouse, because you idle less. And so you can talk in terms of major expansion projects. The debate is, does new roads create new drivers? I think one of the things in California we're trying to do is to focus in on is find ways of reducing the VMT, the vehicle miles traveled per capita, the growth rate per capita. Because if you think in terms of half the state of Texas wants to move to California over the next 25 years or so, some of them are going to want to drive something. Mm-hmm. And so how do we deal with that growth? And so we need to invest, kind of having a balanced investment program with other modes of transportation, make the connection points more efficient. Those are the types of projects that we're really focusing in on.
Okay.
I would say it depends on the area, obviously. Where I'm from in Sacramento, we haven't built a new freeway in 30 years. And we've grown, you know, by 1 million people, and we're projected to grow by another 1 million people. In the Bay Area, MTC's 30-year program, only 4% of their budget goes to fund road construction, new capacity. So the Bay Area is getting its fair share, obviously, of transit money, and transit is being utilized in the Bay Area. I think when I talk to a lot of folks on the road versus transit argument, you know, the highest polluting vehicle is a vehicle that's not moving. And if we increase capacity in those choke holes, we're actually reducing our NOx and greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, I think there has to strike a balance. between transit and road construction. But I think, you know, in areas where that capacity needs to be done, it's obviously going to benefit the majority of folks who still choose to use a vehicle. And I think it's important to also note that in the Bay Area, we have, you know, one of the largest ports on the West Coast. The Port of Oakland and the Port of L.A., they import 70% of our nation's goods through those two ports, and that's a huge component that's going to use our freeway system no matter what we do. You know, so we have to look at that as well.
Okay. Unfortunately, I believe that we've used up our time here today. Sorry about that, Sean.
No problem.
Thank you to all of our panelists, Randall Randy Iwasaki, incoming director and former chief deputy director of Caltrans, Joseph Cruz, director of transportation policy and government affairs, the California Alliance for Jobs, and Sean Randolph, president and CEO, Bay Area Council Economic Institute. We also thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the internet. I'm Michael Cabanatuan from the San Francisco Chronicle, and now this is this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.